It's Sport at 7 on RTE Radio 1. Tom Murphy with you once again this evening, and coming up over the next half hour, we have a wide-ranging interview with Neil Lennon, who tells us that James McLean and Anthony Stokes should both be in Ireland's Euro 2012 squad. Former Derry City great Liam Coyle looks ahead to the Airtricity League season, which kicks off tomorrow night. And making it a hat-trick of Northern Irish interviewees, Olympic Council of Ireland CEO Stephen Martin will be in studio to discuss how preparations for the Games are going, with just over 4 months to go before the action starts in London. As ever, if you have any comments or questions, you can email us sport@7@rte.ie, text 51551, and you can tweet us at RTE Sport at 7.
Sport at 7 on RTE Radio 1, in association with AIB. Supporting clubs, supporting communities.
Yes, a very good evening to you, and another busy half hour ahead of us. You may remember last night, by the way, I was talking to Greg Allen about Rory McIlroy and his chance of becoming world number one if he wins the Honda Classic in Florida. He's going very well. First round 66, 4 under par for Rory. He's 2 shots off the lead in joint second place at the moment. The leader, Davis Love, the third on 6 under par, a fine 64 in the first round for him. But Rory McIlroy perfectly positioned there on 4 under par after his first round. Graham McDowell and Darren Clark out on the course. Pretty early stages for them, both even at the moment. And Padraig Harrington at 1 over par, but again in the early part of his first round. Another breaking news over the last hour or so. The FAI have issued a statement. It's not really breaking news, I suppose, but it's confirmation, if you like, on the issue of the players' qualifying bonuses. They confirmed that they met with the players earlier on in the week, and everything is hunky-dory, all very constructive. The FAI say the talks were conducted in an atmosphere of trust and understanding, and it's all been sorted. But I think that was kind of old news, but it is confirmed now anyway. Now, if you're a male, 16 or 17 years of age, and you fancy yourself as a footballer, your opportunity could be on the horizon. A new RTE programme later this year, Football's Next Star, will give you the chance to win a place at Celtic's prestigious academy. Trials are being conducted in Dublin this weekend and in Limerick the following weekend. The Celtic manager, Neil Lennon, will decide on the 10 players to go forward to the programme from a short list of about 40 or 50. And when I spoke to him earlier on about that, I put it to him that there will be disappointment for those who don't make it.
Well, it is, and it's not the nice side of managing when you have to tell players that it's your opinion and you don't think that they're up to the standard required. I have to do it sometimes at the end of every season with younger players, and sometimes I have to do it with senior players as well, where we say, look, you know, we feel it's time, you've run your course here, you maybe need to move on to further your career somewhere else.
Would you have any concern, though, that a programme like this, where there's so much intense scrutiny of these young lads, that when they do progress then to the academy, that maybe they're under undue pressure?
Well, we hope not. I mean, you know, when they make the final 10, we'll try and make the transition across the water and settle in period in the Glasgow as easy as we possibly can. You know, we've got good staff here, and we're well aware of the extra pressure the boys might feel under, but we'll try and make that as easy a transition as we possibly can for them.
And as a concept, you reckon there is the possibility that you might just unearth a big talent?
Yeah, I mean, we feel it's quite an exciting project, and obviously with our Irish background, you know, it's great to be tapping into the youth system in Ireland. I mean, we've found some great players over the years, and some players go to England, come back, whether they be homesick or haven't settled in, and find their feet again in the League of Ireland, and then go again the second time. But these kids will be 16 to 17, and we're looking forward to getting over there and seeing what's out there.
Now, speaking of getting over there, you were over in Belfast at Windsor Park last night for the first time in 10 years. That must have been an interesting experience.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, it was made to feel very welcome, and I got really well looked after. Bit of a disappointing result, obviously, for Michael in his first game, but he's obviously got a lot to work with there. But in terms of being back, it wasn't a problem at all, and it was good to see some of my players getting a run out as well.
From Michael's point of view, obviously what he achieved with Shamrock Rovers was very significant. He has a big job ahead of him now with the Northern Ireland, particularly when you look at the result last night. But does he have the raw material there, do you think?
That's a good question. I think Northern Ireland are very much in a transitional period, if you want to call it that. I mean, the results haven't been good the past 5 or 6 games. you know, looking at the game last night, I thought they played some really good football, particularly in the first half. But I thought the scoreline flattered Norway. I didn't think it was a 3-0 game by any means. He has got some good young players to work with. He needs to keep the likes of Johnny Evans, Stephen Davis around the squad, Aaron Hughes, that experience and quality to bring the younger players on, because they'll be vital in any, you know, forthcoming campaigns for the future.
He must be a very frustrated man, though, when he looks at the likes of James McLean, you know, Shane Duffy, Darren Gibson and so on, opting to play for the Republic. I wonder, in your view, is there anything that the IFA can do to help stem the flow of players to the Republic?
I think the IFA are doing all they can, really, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's probably down to the, you know, the lads' own personal choice where they want to play. It's their own preference, and it's very, very difficult to, as a manager anyway, you can put your side of things across, obviously, but you can't make people do what they don't want to do, if you know what I mean. And, you know, Scotland have had the same problem with James McCarthy and Aidan McGeady in previous years, so it's not just exclusive to Northern Ireland, but it is, obviously, from the IFA's point of view, a worrying trend.
And given your experience down through the years, I suppose you can see it's very understandable that the likes of a James McLean from the Craigan, for example, would choose to play for Ireland Republic.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're talking ancient history now. I mean, that's well over 10 years ago, and, you know, the IFA have made great strides to improve that side of the circumstances over there. At the end of the day, you want to play international football. I think some guys are very lucky they have a choice of picking two countries, really. But in my view, it's difficult for Northern Ireland if they're losing the best young players to the south. But again, it's down to their own personal choice, and I fully respect that and understand it.
Let's talk about James McLean then. I know you were in Belfast last night and wouldn't necessarily have seen the game at the Aviva Stadium. He only got 11 minutes at the end, but created a bit of a stir in the stadium, and obviously Ireland equalised while he was on the field. How big a player is he going to be for the Republic of Ireland, do you think?
Well, I watched him for Sunderland against Norwich, and I was really impressed. You know, and Martin's obviously got him playing great football at the minute, and his rise has been meteoric in the last few months. And it's a huge plus for Ireland to have a quality young player coming into the squad at this stage, with the Euros just around the corner. And he's in great form. You know, he's been in great form for his club. I obviously didn't get to see the game last night, but from what I have seen, I think, you know, there's a cracking player there. You know, young, talented, quick. You know, he's got a great left foot. He's obviously got an eye for a goal, because he's let in a few goals already in the Premier League. And he looks fearless to me. You know, one of these young players who, doesn't matter who the opposition is, he just goes out and plays the game with a sense of freedom about himself.
If you were the manager, would McLean be in your squad?
Yes, he would, yeah. You know, the kid's good enough to go and play, no doubt about it. And I understand Mr. Trapattoni's side of things, where, you know, he'd like to be loyal to the players that got him there, but, I mean, he's got, 22 players to pick from, so, you know, young James has got a great chance. And he wouldn't have picked him if he didn't think he was good enough in the first place.
One man who's been banging in goals left, right and centre for you, Anthony Stokes, currently not in the Ireland squad, but he has to be knocking on the door if he keeps scoring goals.
Yeah, I mean, I'm disappointed that he wasn't called up for friendly. I don't know what more he has to do, really. He's been in great form for us this season. You know, he scored goals in Europe, and he scored big goals for us, and important goals as well at times, important times of the season. His game's improving. He's worked very, very hard at his game, his work off the ball and obviously with the ball. He's only 23, and I feel, you know, I don't think he should be overlooked. I know we didn't go to the tournament at the end of the season, but I know there's another, you know, a few other players didn't go either. I think, you know, in terms of goal scorers, I don't think Ireland are blessed with a lot of them, and I think he's a natural goal scorer, and wherever he's been in his career, he scored goals.
His confidence is obviously very high at the moment.
Well, yeah, but listen, he had a bit of a reputation, we all know about that in the past, but he's really knuckled down this season, and he's made a huge contribution, and, you know, he is a confident lad by nature, but he's not arrogant with it, and, you know, I've seen a big difference in him this year, and we're absolutely delighted with him over here.
From Celtic's point of view, exciting times ahead as well. Obviously sitting pretty now at this stage at the top of the SPL. Rangers in the news today with the threat of redundancies at the club, and they'll be making a further announcement about that tomorrow. Where do you stand on this argument that, you know, for Celtic to thrive, they do need Rangers there and that rivalry?
Well, I mean, I've been asked before, do we need a strong Rangers?
Yeah.
And I've said no. You know, we can stand up on our own. We're, you know, financially solid. We've got a core of really exciting, talented young players. We've got a great fan base, obviously. In terms of if the liquidation ever came about, I personally would miss the derbies. You know, I think it's a pretty special fixture, and that's one real good selling point when you're trying to get players to come, you know, to Scotland, is, you know, to play in a game as ferocious as that. So, but I can't really comment too much on it, Con, because it's none of our business, really. We're just ticking along with our season, and we can't sort of legislate for what's going on across the road, really.
I suppose you don't want to count your chickens before they're hatched as well, but there is a big gap at the top of the table there. Match against Aberdeen coming up this weekend. No problem sort of motivating the players when you have such a big lead at the top of the table, is there?
No, I mean, it's the run that's keeping them motivated. I think when you've won as many games as that consecutively, it happens once in your career. I think, you know, it'd be very rare if these boys did something like that again. And I think, you know, my message to the players is keep it going for as long as you can. It's fantastic. You know, they're playing with a lot of confidence. They're playing with a lot of belief, which, you know, they've grown to develop over the past season and a half. And I'm really proud of them, and I'm enjoying watching them play at the minute.
That's Neil Lennon speaking to me earlier on today. By the way, a reminder, if you are interested in participating in the trials for football's Next Star over the next two weekends, here in Dublin this weekend, Limerick next weekend, or even if you're too old maybe and you know somebody who might be interested, you can email football@tyroneproductions.ie, and there's also more details on the RTE website. If you go to rte.ie/TRTE. There'll be more details on that as well. Well, tomorrow evening, the new Airtricity League season kicks off with the champions Shamrock Rovers away to Drogheda in the first RTE television live match of the campaign. The Premier Division has been extended to 12 teams, with Cork City, Shelburne and Monaghan back in the top flight. I'm joined to look ahead to the forthcoming season from our Derry studio by former Derry City legend and soon-to-be MNS pundit Liam Coyle. Liam, good evening to you.
Good evening, Con. How you doing?
Very good indeed. Now, just before we talk about the League of Ireland, I would like to ask you one question just on what we were talking about there with Neil Lennon, the player drain from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland. You played for Northern Ireland briefly and you know, had a tough time with it, I suppose, in some respects. Is there anything that they can do in Belfast, in the IFA offices, to prevent this, you know, talent coming south?
Well, that's a big question that's going on up here at the minute, Con, and you know, and the fortunate thing about it is that mostly all the players that's happening as well come from this city, like, you know, so they have a really hard job on them, trying to persuade young footballers. They play for Northern Ireland at the minute. You know, you're talking to Neil Lennon here. Here's a man that retired when he was at the top of his game, you know, at a top international. So, you know, I know they've appointed Gerry Armstrong as a mentor to young players. They try and persuade them. They choose Northern Ireland. So, you know, they've an uphill task, I think, trying to do it.
Okay, well, listen, let's have a word then about the league. And obviously, over the winter, there's been a lot of changes. New teams, of course, coming into the division, as I said, with those three shells, Cork and Monaghan. New managers, new players, a lot of changes, but a lot to look forward to as well, I think.
Well, without a doubt, I think the myself this season is going to be a lot more competitive, Con, to be honest. You know, I think last year, you know, with the likes of Galway and that at the bottom, you know, the bottom teams just went through the motions for most of the season, you know, and, you know, outside of Rovers, Derry, Pats, you know, they were the three, Sligo, sorry, kept the league alive. So I think this season, with Cork coming back up again, Shelburne coming, you know, you're talking about big clubs, and I think it could only be good for the league.
12 teams in the division now, of course. That means 33 games. So for some teams, they'll have home advantage twice over others, which I suppose could have a bearing on the outcome.
Well, that's the way it was when we were playing, Con, you know. So you always had a... You had to face that and cope with it. Like, as footballers, I don't think it really matters if you're playing twice at home or once or whatever, you know. But I think, you know, for most teams now, it's a great opportunity. You know, they do well, as you say. Everything's changed. There's a lot of managers that come in. They'll be bringing their own ideas, and you know, I think it's really set up for an exciting season.
Yeah, if you take all the top teams in the betting, in fact, you know, Shamrock Rovers are the favourites with the bookmakers. Stephen Kenny, new manager. Sligo, Ian Barraclough, new manager. Pats, Liam Buckley, new manager. Declan Devine in charge at Derry City, new manager. So all the teams that are kind of favoured in the betting anyway have new men in charge.
Well, that's right. You know, I think the four teams you mentioned are going to be the four. I think it's going to be challenging. You know, obviously Shamrock Rovers, league champions the last two seasons, and Stephen Kenny going in there, you know, under a bit of pressure because as league champions, the Rovers fans are going to be expecting to do it again. But you know, when you look at the amount of players that have gone. Are going round the clubs, you know, yeah. Especially Pats and Rovers, you know, they're really going all out to try and win this league, and Shamrock Rovers are going to be the team to beat again, I think.
How good are Derry City going to be?
Well, you know, they've lost Eamon Zaid, Gareth McGlynn, they lost James McLean halfway through the season, and they lost for my money the best fullback in the league last year, Daniel Lafferty, so obviously they're going to be weakened. Come on, but they've replaced him with Rory Patterson, who scored a lot of goals in the Irish League. Remains to be seen what he does in the League of Ireland. But you know, I still think Derry will be competitive, and I still think they'll be up there challenging.
In terms of the fight for avoiding relegation, there's one automatic team relegated, and second from bottom then will be involved in a playoff. Is it pretty obvious? I mean, are there the standout teams that you think will be fighting against the relegation battle?
Well, looking at it, you would think so. You know, I'm sure Roddy will not be too happy that Monaghan are being mentioned as a team that might go back down again from the first division. You know, I think Shelburne will do okay because you know, they showed in the cup final that they're strong and they're well organised and they're going to be hard to beat, especially at Tolka. You know, it's going to be another tough season for Drogheda, I think. I was just looking at some of the players they brought in. Most of them are from the lower leagues and their youth setup. So, you know, that's going to be another struggle. Dundalk are the same. You know, Sean Caffrey's taken over there, who has had a great record playing with the youth at the Republic. So that looks to be the way they're going. But I think you know, it's going to be a long season, I think, for the likes of Drogheda and Monaghan.
Final question for you then. If you have one wish for the coming season, what would it be?
Well,
apart from Miss World on the M&S couch beside you.
Well, that would be, if you could sort that out, that'd be grand. Come. But, you know, I would love to see Derry, you know, up there challenging, making a real go of it. You know, I think losing Stephen Kenny was a big blow for them at the end of the season, and I would just love to see them up there having a really go at it and challenging the top teams from Dublin.
Well, I must say I'm really looking forward to it, like you, Liam, and look forward to seeing you on the M&S couch on this coming Monday. We'll talk to you then.
Looking forward to it, Con. Cheers.
Thanks a million, Liam. That's Liam Coyle there from our Derry studios. Now, there are 148 days to go before the 2012 London Olympics get underway, and the focus over the coming weeks and months will be on those hoping to qualify for the Games. Earlier on today, the Irish men's and women's hockey squads for the forthcoming qualification tournaments were announced. The men's tournament, of course, is taking place here in Dublin later this month. Track and field athletes, swimmers and many more will be hoping to make the grade and represent Ireland in London. Well, I'm joined in studio now by Stephen Martin, Chief Executive of the Olympic Council of Ireland. Stephen, thanks for coming into the studio this evening. Those hockey squads named today, of course, you're a man who has an Olympic gold medal from Seoul with the GB hockey team. And so you know what it means not only to win a medal but to get to the Games and to represent your nation at the Games.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a fantastic honour to compete at any Olympic Games, and for Irish hockey who haven't been there in recent times, certainly the last time 1908, but that was in a different era.
Yeah.
It would be fantastic for the sport in terms of the profile of the sport, and I think both, certainly the men's team, are playing at a very high level and would probably have the best chance, and particularly with home advantage, of qualifying for the Games. And I think, you know, obviously from my perspective, being involved with the Olympic movement and from my own sports background, it would be great to have hockey as part of the overall team. It would add just a huge dynamic, new dynamic to the
great
overall team.
Great profile for the sport as well here.
Absolutely, yeah.
In terms of their chances of making it, you might just put into perspective what they have to do and what the likelihood is that they might achieve.
Yeah, the men have to play against, I suppose, two sides who are seeded ahead of them. Korea ranked 6th in the world, and Malaysia are ranked, I think, around 10th. The other teams below that Ireland should have a chance of winning, you know, pretty easily. So it may come down to goal difference. But I think what they want to be trying to do is to be playing on the last match, on the last day, on the 18th of March. you know, St. Paddy's Day, 17th of March, is not a bad day. Nobody would want to beat Ireland on that day. And certainly on the 18th of March, that's really what they want to set up to play for a place in the Olympic Games.
And do you think the home advantage is a major factor in all of this?
I think it is. I mean, I think most tournaments' stats would show that home teams have, you know, performed better than expected. And obviously we're hoping that will be the case here. Irish hockey have done really well to actually get the qualifier here in Ireland, and it does add a performance advantage to the team.
We'll just hear very briefly from the Irish team coach, Paul Revington, because he was speaking earlier on to Roy Willoughby, and he spoke first of all about the warm-up matches that they've had against some top opposition and where it leaves them now.
Yeah, I think the main objective for this phase was to try and secure as many top-end games as possible. And we picked up 10 games, you know, playing Spain, Belgium, Netherlands, Great Britain. So tempo-wise and game-wise, that was of a really high quality for us in our preparation phase.
It seems to me that Ireland are pushing the top-notch nations much closer now than they have been ever before.
Yeah, I think so. I would be wrong to say that this has never happened, but I think consistently it's happening a lot more, and I think the respect that the other countries have for us at the moment is very high.
You're playing in front of the home crowd here in Belfield during the tournament. Is that going to just put added pressure that they maybe haven't had before?
I wouldn't say added pressure. I think the group see it as a bonus in certain phases where, you know, outside of the fast hockey that we're wanting to play, there'll be some tough moments where we've got a battle and we've got a fight. And at the end of the day, that's where we're looking for the home crowd to really get us through those phases and hopefully see us through into the final.
Oh, that'd be great. The first match is on the 10th of March against Russia, and as Paul Revington was saying there, a big crowd could make a difference. The tickets are selling well, apparently.
They are indeed, yeah, and obviously added home support. It's no point in having the tournament here if hockey people and actually non-hockey people come along and support the team.
For the women's team, they're playing in a tournament in Belgium. A bigger mountain for them to climb?
If you look at the ranking list, it's probably more evenly matched. I suppose Spain and Belgium would be the two teams ranked above Ireland who would provide the main challenge, but it's a much more equally balanced tournament. Mm. Spain have traditionally qualified for the games. Belgium are up and coming. So, you know, five pool matches and then a playoff, so anything's possible. But I think watching both teams, Ireland men's and women's, at the European Championship, certainly the men at the moment are playing they're much closer to the top nations. But, you know, it may be a surprise that the women might qualify.
Mm. As a former sportsman yourself, you must be aware of the sort of stresses and the tensions that athletes are under at the moment in terms of trying to achieve the target of qualifying for the Games. How intense is that for them?
I think for a lot of sports, it's an advantage to qualify early because you have more chance to prepare. But others actually would prefer to come in a little bit later and be on a run, you know. And
I think I heard David Gillick saying that he'd rather do it this year and be in form.
Yeah, and even some people who've qualified in other countries have made times. They still have to keep performing at a high level. And so you need, I think the main thing is to have, you know, good constant competition and stay fit and healthy so that when you actually get to whatever tournament, whether it's a qualifying tournament or some key events, and particularly the games themselves, that you're in a healthy position where you can actually challenge. But it's we have 27 athletes who have got qualified places at the moment, 13 track and field, 3 boxing, 3 cycling on the road, 1 gymnast, which was a good surprise.
That was a great story as well.
And a great story, and 5 sailing and 2 swimming. And, you know, we expect a team of around 42 to 52. And obviously, if a hockey team qualify, that number would add by 16. And this game's round, you know, Sonia O'Sullivan's our chef de mission, iconic Irish athlete. And, you know, there are quite a lot of new faces in there, and new sports, for example, in modern pentathlon, if Natalia qualifies, Lisa Kearney, who's winning World Cup medals in judo, Aileen Morrison in triathlon, winning World Cup medals. Yeah. And, of course, if Katie Taylor qualifies, she'll be, hopefully be a real star for the Games.
It will be great. In terms of your job at the moment now at the Olympic Council of Ireland, what is it 148 days out from the Games?
It's now starting to be, you know, really, really manic in terms of the final preparation. We work very closely with all the sports agencies, the sports council, the institutes, and obviously the National Federation performance directors in all our planning for the games. I think one of the key things that's been a big advantage this time round is we've managed to get 12 of the 14 sports so far to test events. So most of the sports have experienced London. They've experienced the competition venue that they're going to be at at the games. And so we've been very much involved in that. We have a training base, multi-sport training base planned for St Mary's and Twickenham for six of the sports. Others will do their own thing because it meets their needs prior to the games. Obviously, media interest, because once 2012 turned, 1st of January, there was a huge amount of media interest and great expectation. But I think from our perspective, we just want to make sure that we're working with the sports very closely to ensure that we facilitate their games experience in the most positive way and add whatever value we can along the way.
You were at the recent track cycling, the World Cup test event at the Velodrome. What's the setup like over there? It
was fantastic. Yeah. You know, Martin Irvine was competing there in the Omnium, which is like the pentathlon, a new event for this time around, for pentathlon for cycling, and he did extremely well. I mean, he's got a nice program there. He's based in Mallorca with Andy Sparks, an American coach, whose wife actually is one of the top riders in the world. But the Velodrome was like a gladiator's cauldron. And the atmosphere, certainly when people, you know, the home team were doing well, was fantastic. So it's one to look out for, and certainly Martin's one to look out for, and hopefully he'll qualify at his final World Cup race in April this year.
Well, we will follow his progress and indeed the progress of all of our potential athletes closely here on RTE Radio. And every Thursday we'll be focusing on London 2012 here on Sport at 7 for this evening. Stephen, thanks a million for coming in. And no doubt we'll be talking to you again between now and the games. Thanks very much indeed.
Sport at 7 on RTE Radio 1, in association with AIB. Supporting clubs, supporting communities.
Well, that's Sport at 7 for this evening. Thanks indeed to Andrew Kane, who was on sound, Maeve Mooney, our broadcast coordinator and producer, Roy Willoughby, from myself, Con Murphy. Have a very nice Thursday evening. It's